that they were the Yankees. I mean, they.
61, Ford had that terrific year. What?
Yeah, 25.
Games. Did he? Well, Whitey Ford won 25? Yeah. See, I didn't know that. Yeah, he won 25 games.
Because Maris and Mantle had all the attention.
And wasn't that the first year of, it was Arroyo, was the relief pitcher that year.
Yeah.
Louis
Arroyo.
Came out of nowhere.
Left-handed. Yeah, left-handed. Screwball.
All right, let's go.
Yeah.
Brooks, we were talking about the great players you played against, both in the American League and in the World Series and All-Star games. Can we talk about some of the others? We talked about Maris and Mantle. You obviously played against Yogi toward the end. He was finishing up. But talk about some of the other guys that are in the Hall of Fame now that you played in, Drysdale, Koufax.
Well, starting with Ted Williams, I mean, I got to play against Ted the last year in 60. I guess it was his last year. In fact, I was there when he hit the home run the last time up. They were playing the Orioles in Fenway Park, and that's still a big thrill because I see that little film clip all the time, and I'm just kind of standing there like that. He's looked like a big horse coming around second base. You know, I'm standing there with my eyes like this, seeing him come around. And the strange thing about that, the next to the last time up, he hit a ball that was actually out of the ballpark, and I think it was Al Pilarczyk playing center field for the Orioles, jumped up, grabbed the ball, and he was out. And the next time up, he hit the home run. And although they had three more games, he didn't make it to Yankee. That was his last time up. He didn't go to Yankee Stadium to finish the season.
And he didn't tip his cap either.
And no, you're absolutely right. It was a day game, and he wouldn't come back out and tip his hat. So Pinky Higgins, I think, was the manager at that particular time. He sent him out to left field, and then he took him out of the game as soon as he got out to left field, and Ted had to kind of do that, but he wouldn't come out and give the fans a...
But he says today that that's one of his regrets. He doesn't have many, but he thinks he made a mistake.
Yeah, well, he probably did make a mistake. I don't think there are, you know, I'm saying there were 10,000, 12,000 people there at that. It was a day game. But anyway, he is really, I would say, the most respected player that I've known in my lifetime. I mean, guys just love him, you know, and that's... That's a great tribute to him, but I got to play. I guess every generation likes to think their generation is the best, and I look at the time, the 60s and 70s. To me, I think I played at the best time with the best players. Now, that's not for me. That's just my judgment. But boy, you talk about guys like Koufax who just dominated the game. Then you think about a guy like Juan Marichal who dominated the game, but wasn't quite Sandy Koufax, although he was right there. If he'd have been in the American League, he'd have probably won the Cy Young Award four times in a row, Marichal, but another great pitcher. And I didn't mind hitting off of Koufax as much as I did Drysdale. Drysdale was another one of those intimidating pitchers, and like he didn't care if he hit you or not sometimes. Where Koufax was just, he had the velocity and the curveball, and he came from the same spot all the time. Where Drysdale kind of sidearms you and big and rangy. I didn't really like to hit off him. Another guy that our careers paralleled almost was Dostremski. And just a great day-in, day-out player who worked, and became a superstar.
How about Bob Gibson? Did you...
Gibson, a great pitcher. I mean, if you had one game to win... this is a guy you'd want to see on the mound. Bob Gibson was the competitor.
Because you didn't see him that much.
I didn't see him that much. All-Star game, spring training probably, but I saw him on TV, and that's probably as good as that's the best place to watch him from.
How about Whitey Ford?
Ford was a great pitcher. Whitey kept the ball down, good curveball, had a spitter once in a while for you, but... he could throw any time. He could throw any pitch any time for a strike, and that's one of the secrets to pitching. When you're 2-0, 3-0, you don't have to lay the fastball in there. He'd throw a changeup, curveball, but he had great players behind him. But Whitey Ford was the master, and left-handers almost automatic outs. Left-hand hitters against him. I know that Jim Gentile. I don't think Jim ever got a hit off of Whitey Ford. If Whitey Ford was pitching, it was no use to play Jim Gentile. I mean, he was not going to get a hit, so you'd put someone else out at first base. But Whitey was just the consummate pro and went out there every fourth or fifth day and gave you workmanship job every time he went out there.
How about Denny McLain?
Denny McLain was there when he won 30 games, like 1968. And Denny didn't mind hitting off of Denny. His fastball was, he threw hard, but it was straight. He had a changeup and a good curveball. And Denny just was a great pitcher, not only that year, but he had some other big years. But Denny McLain won 30 games. I think that's the last guy to win 30 games. Denny had the Tigers outstanding ball club, good players all the way around, with K-Line, Mickey Stanley, Willie Harton, Don Word at third.
Lolich,
another outstanding pitcher. He was the MVP in the 68 World Series. He won three games that year. But Denny was really the guy they call for the big ball games in that particular year.
How about Seaver?
Tom Seaver, I'd say he was a lot like Denny as far as throwing, hard, smooth, and if you wanted your kid to be a pitcher, I'd say look at Tom Seaver or look at Robin Roberts. These are the guys who just to watch them throw. I mean, they're right foot. They do everything. Their fundamentals are terrific. And Tom was just threw hard and good control. All these guys got good control. So that was another.
You saw Clemente in his final game, yeah. Sadly. What were your impressions during that series of Roberto?
Well, I thought Roberto was a great player. I mean, you'd have to put him with the other great players of the game. Playing in Pittsburgh, consequently, probably never got the publicity the other guys did. And the only thing that he didn't do as much of was hit home runs. But I think when Roberto made up his mind to hit a home run, he could hit one, you know, but he was basically a double, triples hitter, line drive, and that's really his biggest asset. And the reason I admire him is because I didn't get to play against him except in spring training, World Series, All-Star games, but you hear how great these players are, and then you get in the World Series. I mean, the showcase of baseball, and you have these players like Roberto do the very things you hear he can do against you. And you just admire a guy like that because that's as good as it gets right there. And Roberto was the MVP in that 71 World Series, which we played against the Pittsburgh in 19.
How about his arm? People always.
His arm was. I put his arm is better than anyone. I saw him make a play in that particular series where he caught a ball in the right field corner. I think Frank Robinson was on second, but he just whirled around and threw a ball. It was like a strike to third base from the right field corner, and just a great arm. And I think it bothered Roberto, God bless his soul, that he didn't get the publicity that the other guys did, because I think, you know, deep down he says, hey, I'm on a par with these guys, but I just don't seem to be able to get the publicity that they do. But he was a great, great player.
Well, and it's still happening, because one of the things that Claire and I were offended by was the all-century team, the 50
sure.
in Boston that year, and they left Roberto off. And, you know, you say to yourself, how can anybody have a list and not have it included?
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
They left Roberto off, Frank Robinson, Stan
Musial.
Well, yeah.
Was this 100 players they had, or that was
50.
This?
50. I think it was 50.
Yeah. So, okay.
And they left Chris Speaker off, and Pye yeah. Trainer, and a lot of guys you and I talked about.
Well, they all.
It's because they don't know.
They don't know.
And people, you know, who was Pye Trainer? People absolutely. Have no idea what until you came along. Yeah. I think it was sort of standard belief that Pye Trainer was the greatest third baseman.
Yeah.
And nobody remembers him. It's sad.
Yeah. Well, it when you talk about the all-century team, I mean, it's basically a little popularity contest.
And it's a gimmick.
A gimmick, and whatever company, they certainly got their publicity out of it. But it probably, as I said, it's a popularity contest yeah. to some degree. And I mean, you can't leave Frank Robinson off or Roberto off or Tris Speaker, and but I mean, you know, I was talking about earlier, I remember having my picture made with Home Run Baker in there going way back. Yeah. I mean, he was at that particular time the greatest, you know, third. And then I got to meet Pye Trainer too, so I saw all those guys and got to shake their hand. Mm-hmm. And the thing that they were real gentlemen too. I mean, these guys were just to think play back when they played. It was
Now, did you hit against Spahn, who was a great...
I got to hit against Warren Spahn in spring training, and he'll never forget it because I hit a home run off of him. And Spahn is one of those guys who's got that... he's got that photogenic brain. I mean, I'll see him and he'll say, I remember the first time I saw you, I threw you a fastball up and out over the plate and you hit a home run. I hit a home run or a double as well. I think it was a home run to right center field, and he never forgets it. Those are the kind of guys that, even Jim Palmer with the Orioles, he could tell you what, whoever hit a home run, he can remember it back to whenever he started. He knows what pitch it was, what the count was. And I'm saying, I don't believe this, but he does it. And those guys, are, that's part of what made them the great pitcher that they are.
How about that youngster out of Philadelphia, Mike Schmidt?
Well, Mike Schmidt, arguably the greatest who's ever played. When you combine power and defense, I mean, here's a guy who's, I mean, won a lot of gold gloves, and is probably his offense has a tendency to overshadow his defense. But he could do it all, you know. And I put Mike right there in the... He's the tops.
He had that nice little play, defensive play, alongside the mound, too, that he always...
Yeah, I saw him make it back on TV a couple of times, come across there, barehand the ball and throw it. But, Mike is, he's as good as he gets. He really
is. You know, Brooks, we always talk about success and wonderful plays and great moments. I think it's important for, especially young people, to look at someone like you and have some sense of, what were the bad days? I mean, what were the times when you were struggling, the slump, the World Series where you didn't do well? Can you talk a little bit about the days when things went wrong and how you got through that? What did you learn from failure?
Well, I learned a lot of things from failure. I mean, when you play 162 games, I don't think any sport emulates life like baseball. I mean, you play football once a week or basketball twice, but when you start playing baseball, you play every day, day in and day out, and you understand in a hurry that you're going to have bad days and bad nights. You're going to have bad weeks, and it's a time that you just have to kind of make up your mind it's just tomorrow's tomorrow, and you forget about it. And when I think about it, I think my love for the game overrode everything else. I mean, I'm in the Hall of Fame, I don't think because of my great ability, but I think my love for the game probably overrode everything else. And just the fact that I was playing big league baseball every day and something that I never wanted to do anything else but be a big league player, that helped put the bad days in perspective and the good days in perspective. And my good friend Gene Woodling, he was with the Orioles for a while, and I love that fella.
He just died.
He just passed away. Nice. Absolutely. But he came over, and I can remember having a big day one time. And this was when I was young in my career. And he was there as a player and as a coach. But he came over and he said, "Listen, big boy, don't get gay when you're full of bull." You know, so that meant when things are going good, don't get too excited. When things are not going too good, well, you just keep looking up and keep going. And that's really what the game's all about. You've got to be able to put things out of your mind and come back the next day and get ready to play. But that's the only thing I can think of. I never really got too excited about things or never got too down too deep. I remember on my... Things you do remember, my 23rd birthday, I was 0-for-23. I remember that. I hadn't had a hit in 23 times. I remember we played Oakland. I made 3 errors in 1 inning. And the only positive thing happened that night was Frank Robinson hit a home run the 9th inning off of Raleigh Fingers. We won the game. But the next day, the headlines were, Robinson makes 3 errors in 1 inning. And I said, well, if they'd have hit me 2 more balls, I'd have made 5 errors in 1 inning. So, you know, those things are going to happen. But I really believe that if you play this game a long time, I mean, somebody's going to get you or you're going to get them. You know, it's not going to be all great things happening to you all the time. And you learn to live with those things. You know, the Mets beating us in 69, that was a real shock because that's really the best team I ever played on, the 69 team. We won 109 games, and we lost our last 5 out of 6, I believe, because we could have won 115 or 16 games that year, and we won 109, and we won the first game, and then we lost 4 in a row. And that was a little shock because, you know, we'd only been in one World Series, and we won 4 in a row, and then But we came back the next year and had a big year and ended up being the world's champion. So you just you can't savor things too long in this game. You've just got to enjoy it and then let it go, because you know you're going to be back out there the next day.
Let's talk about the World Series, because again, when these people look at you and look at you as a historical figure, I think a lot of them are going to think about those great World Series performances. Can you talk about your recollections of those over those years? I mean, I think it was in the 70s as opposed to 69, but I think those World Series are really very important to talk about.
Yeah, well, the 1969 World Series, we were heavily favored to beat the Mets, but I think most people don't realize or forget, well, the Mets won 100 games that year, so they had a pretty good ball club.
And a pretty good pitching staff.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you run a Kuzman and a Gentry and a Seaver out there every three or four days, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think the guy that surprised us more than anything in that series was Gentry. He threw a lot better than we thought he could throw. And, of course, they made a lot of plays. Boy, A.G. in center field. I mean, I hit the ball Swoboda. Remember the catch Swoboda made? I mean, that would have been a two-run triple. It ended up being a sacrifice fly, but that could have changed the outcome of that game. And
He says that's the play that everybody remembers.
Sure.
That's all they remember.
Yeah, I mean, he went right straight across, headlong dive. I hit the ball off a Seaver, and Swoboda caught it. So I tell him, no one would have heard of you if I hadn't hit that ball. You know.
You're right.
But anyway, that was a World Series, and they always say it was good for baseball, and I guess it was that the Mets won, but it was a real shocker for us to lose that World Series. And then the next year, we came right back and won over 100 games and went into the World Series against Cincinnati. And we really took advantage of Cincinnati's pitching that year. They had a pitching staff that was pretty beat up. I think Jim Merritt was hurting, and McLaughlin wasn't. They had some guys that... they just didn't have a real good pitching staff, and we took advantage of it. Actually, we scored more runs that year than Cincinnati did, so we had a good offensive team. And going into that series, I knew that I was going to get a lot of work along with Belanger, because they had right-handed hitters like Perez and Rose and Bench and Lee May, and I just knew we were going to get a lot of work. And Belanger did too, and we had McNally and had Cuellar, left-hand pitchers, and then Palmer, who threw great fastball, but he had a big slow curve. But anyway, the thing that people don't remember in that World Series, the first ball was hit to me in the first inning was like a little 24 hopper, and I think it was Woody Woodward hit it to me, and I got it and made a high throw to Boog Powell, and for an error. And I'm saying to myself, here we go again. Just like 69, you know. I mean, how in the heck can you blow that play right there? A high throw to Boog Powell, that's pretty high. Anyway, I got an error on that play, but everything else after that was pretty upbeat. And after about the third game, I had a chance to make a lot of plays, and I'm saying to myself, boy, this is just, you know, unreal. I mean, we got to get this over with. I can't keep this up, you know. I had a lot of plays down there and made the plays, and I was also hitting well, too. And it was, I tell people I played almost 23 years professionally, and I don't think I ever had five games in a row where I had a chance to do the things that I did in that particular World Series.
It seemed to us, just watching, that ball after ball went down there over the bag.
Yeah.
And somehow you got it and threw people out. It seemed to be sort of one after another. And you're saying as that was happening, you were aware, you were self-conscious about the fact that you were making the play.
Oh, yeah. I realized that. I mean, I just, because I was one, Lee May went into foul territory and threw him out on a one bounce to Boog, and then Lee May hit another in which I spun around and we ended up making a double play. And then when we got to Baltimore, Johnny Bench hit one I dove out here and caught. So it was just a once in a lifetime five game series, and it happened to be the World Series. That's the way I can explain it. You know, someone with Rex Barney, who's passed away,
a great man, a
great
man.
Our Rex was wonderful.
I love Rex.
After the World Series was over, or maybe after one of the games, but anyway, all the writers were waiting on me to come to my locker, you know, and Rex said, well, don't worry about him, just interview his glove there in the locker, you know, that's what's doing all the work.
That's, in retrospect, that World Series, two Hall of Fame managers, almost 10 Hall of Fame players, that, did you realize at that point what a plethora of talent was on the field? That must have been quite exciting.
Well, it was exciting. I never thought too much about it. I mean, I knew how great Bench and Rose and those two particular players and the managers, they'd had a lot of success, but I don't think I thought about the Hall of Fame. You know, I tell people I played 10 years professionally before I ever thought about the Hall of Fame, and it's the fans more than anyone else who's, you hear some, hey, Brooks, you got a chance for the Hall of Fame? Well, I started thinking about it after those World Series, and you know, in the 71 All-Star game, I think there was like 20-something guys on those teams who went to the Hall of Fame. And if you stop and think about it, I mean, I can name about 15 of them off the top of my head, but that one 71 game, it was unbelievable the amount of guys who were in the All-Star and went to the Hall of Fame. But I was happy to see that game get series get over, because I knew I couldn't keep going and doing the things I was doing. It was a 5-game series they ended up being. And 71, we were favored to beat Pittsburgh. We won first two in Baltimore. We just blew them away. Went out to Pittsburgh. They won the first game. Then the second game was the first night game in World Series history in 1971. They won that game, and then they won the third game. We came back to Baltimore, and I hit a sacrifice fly in the 10th inning to win that game, 2-1. Frank scored from third base. And then the next day, I think Clemente, they beat us 2-3. Clemente had a home run, and Steve Blast pitched a great game, and they were the world champions.
Do you have any recollections of Willie Stargell in that series?
Oh, yeah, Stargell was there. They love, the players love Stargell. I mean, they absolutely rallied around Stargell. Of course, in 79, when the Orioles got back in the series, that was We Are Family, and Willie was he was a star in that. But they loved Willie. I mean, he had that personality with his outgoing, and the players responded to him.
That's great. Before we move off of the postseason and what it takes to get to the postseason, I want to go back to the year in which the Orioles had to catch the Yankees, and you were all obviously students of the game. Can you tell what happened in that final month where you had to really sprint to catch the Yankees, and how the teams took things, the players took things into their own hands?
Oh, it was, you know what year that was, 75 or 70?
It was 75, 76, I'm sorry, I'm tripping over it. But
we got into the playoffs.
75?
75?
Yeah, 76, 77 Yankees.
74, okay. We won the playoffs. We caught the Yankees, though, right?
Right.